Orden. We're sure she's in there?
The professor nodded. I just scried her minutes ago. She'll be in here. As I recovered, I realized everyone was looking at me.
What?
Professor Orden looked at me. Go on in, Corin. This part is all you.
You're joking.
Orden gestured to the door. You're the one she's going to recognize. You might be able to talk her into coming along with us peacefully. If anything goes wrong, just give us the signal.
I frowned. What signal?
Scream loudly. I sighed, walking over to the door of the shop. To my surprise and relief, Jin fell into step beside me. No one commented on it, and I wasn't going to complain. From the sign on the door, we were arriving during normal business hours, so I didn't bother knocking. I just opened the door. The inside of the building was well lit and doubly well organized. I was shocked to see four complete automobiles in a perfect line, each painted a different color with a small sign in front of it. Right near the entrance, a dark-skinned young man I didn't recognize sat at a desk, looking over paperwork. Toward the back of the room, I could see another line of automobiles, but unfinished and unpainted. From the screeching noise coming from the one on the far right, I could tell someone was working on the carriage with some kind of noisy tool, but I couldn't see them. I stepped up to the desk. There were chairs on my side for a visitor, but I didn't take a seat. The man behind the desk looked up at me.
Good day, sir. Do you have an appointment?
Ah, a secretary. Fair enough. He's probably another student like me, looking to make a bit of spending money. I shook my head.
No, I'm sorry. Just here to visit someone.
Oh, who?
Well, I wasn't exactly planning to tell the whole world this, but...
Vera Quarrington? Is she here?
He nodded immediately, and I breathed a sigh of relief.
Yeah, let me go get her for you. Don't touch anything, seriously. Aloris will murder you.
I nodded, glancing at Jin. He shrugged at me. We waited. The student headed to the back of the room, and that grinding noise I'd been hearing paused after I heard a few hushed words of conversation. A moment later, Vera pushed herself out from under the automobile, setting down a long rod that I wasn't familiar with. She was too far away for me to get a good look at the runes on the side. Vera's eyes widened when she saw me. She glanced from side to side, searching, before walking over with the secretary at her side. I put my hands up in a gesture of peace.
Can we talk?
The secretary glanced at me, then back to Vera.
This guy bothering you, Vera?
He must have been able to tell that she looked nervous. Vera shook her head.
No, I know Corin. Was just surprised to see him here.
I nodded. I've got something important to talk to you about, Vera, related to the last time we saw each other. Vera sighed.
I should have known it had come to this eventually. She turned to the secretary. John, go tell Aloris that Corin is here. Then take the rest of the day off. We need to talk privately.
John blinked.
If you say so.
I do. Aloris should be in the back.
John nodded and headed toward a back room. Vera folded her arms once John was out of sight.
Look, I'm sorry for how things ended, but I needed to make sure I got Echion out of there in one piece. You seemed nice, but I didn't know you or your motives. I still don't.
She probably left me behind as a distraction for Katashi, and maybe to buy more time to get further into the city without being reported to the authorities. I wouldn't have done the same, but she didn't actually hurt me, and I can't blame her for distrusting a stranger. I shrugged in response to her half-hearted apology.
I'm not here about that. We've got bigger things to worry about. Give me a second.
I removed my etching rod and began carving a rune in her door.
What are you doing? You're ruining the wood!
Oh, maybe I should have explained first. I finished carving the rune, noticing Jin nod out of the corner of my eye, then turned back to Vera.
Noise-dampening rune. We really don't want people to hear us.
Aside from Jin here. Jin, this is Vera. Vera, Jin. Vera sighed.
Fine, fine. Nice to meet you, Jin. What's this all about?
I put my rod away and then slipped off my glove to show her the sigil of Katashi on my right hand. Katashi has charged me with bringing you to him within the next week. Otherwise, he's going to wreck the city. Vera reached down for something. Jin moved faster, a pistol appearing in his hand and pressed up against her chest before I could react.
Don't even think about it.
Vera sucked in a sharp breath, putting up her hands in surrender.
I can't go back there. You don't understand. It's not just about me.
I took a moment to process what had just happened, then moved behind Vera and removed the dueling cane from her belt. My old dueling cane, in fact. I looped it onto my own belt.
You can lower the gun, Jin.
Thank you. He lowered the weapon.
If you are certain.
I turned back to Vera.
I don't want this to end in bloodshed, Vera. If there's something I don't understand, make me understand. I'm willing to listen to your side of things, but one way or another, we need Katashi to be satisfied, or he's going to burn this place to the ground.
She sighed again.
Can I put my hands down?
Jin stepped forward, nearly eye to eye with her.
Reach for another weapon, and you'll lose a hand.
Vera glowered at him.
I don't have any other weapons.
Good, Jin replied simply. Vera lowered her arms and leaned up against a nearby wall.
How much do you know?
I rolled my eyes.
About 17 years worth, aside from what I've forgotten. Can you be more specific? About what really happened in the tower?
I scratched my chin.
I've pieced together a fair bit. You went in the tower with a mixed group, some people from Kaleford, some locals. Something bad obviously happened, and you ended up in that prison with the kid.
Akion, she replied.
He's more than just a child.
I folded my arms. When you were in the jail cells, you acted like you didn't even know him. She frowned.
Sorry about that. I couldn't let anyone, especially Karis, realize how important he is to me, and in general.
What if that deception had caused me to leave the two of you in there? Or if Karis got impatient and triggered the traps? Vera shook her head.
Had to take my chances? There was too much of a chance Karis would have killed Akion outright if he'd known what he was dealing with. Akion wouldn't have starved, and I doubt the traps would have done much to him.
She paused for a breath.
Believe me, I thought long and hard about how I was going to behave in order to find the best chance of getting us both out. And that meant trying to get myself out so I could find a way to free him. You having a second key just made it easier. If you'd just freed Akion and tried to walk out, I suspect Katashi would have just killed you both.
I nodded.
Why'd Katashi attack him? Was this some kind of coup? Is Akion actually Tenjin?
Vera shook her head.
No, but it's not a bad guess.
She took in a deep breath.
Let me start from the beginning. Kaleford and Velia have been allies since the 6 Years' War.
I remembered the class about that. About 80 years ago, Edria's army had swept east and conquered the kingdom of Kelridge, now known as East Edria, which sat along Velia's border. They'd continued to push toward Velia, but we put up a better fight. Kaleford was on the opposite side of the continent, the far west side, and bordered West Edria. They were concerned about being Edria's next target after Velia fell, and had some border skirmishes on their own, so they provided us with advanced weapons during the war. Kaleford's powerful cannons had been a key part of how we were able to hold the numerically superior Edrian army at bay.
I waved a hand.
Sure, I take it this had something to do with the Edrian forces massing at our borders? Vera nodded.
More than you realize. Kaleford and Velia have been bracing for another Edrian push for decades. Our spies told us that the time for that assault is finally on the horizon, so we needed to accelerate the timeline on one of our most important research projects.
Some sort of joint military research between our nations made sense.
I nodded for her to continue. Our team was put together from some of the best each nation could offer. I was the least experienced, but I had a strong connection with the research subject.
The research subject was a person? I frowned. Akion, I suppose?
Jin raised a hand to his temple, looking introspective.
Vera continued.
Yeah, I'm sure you saw the marks on his forehead. We were doing some unusual research with him. We had a powerful enough group that we assumed we could keep him safe regardless of what we ran into. We weren't expecting a visage.
I folded my arms, considering.
Katashi or Tenjin?
Tenjin.
One of the members of our group cast what sounded like an ordinary summoning spell, but Tenjin arrived instead of the summoned monster. Showed up with an entourage. Told us that what we were doing was extraordinarily dangerous, that we were dabbling with powers beyond our comprehension, that sort of thing. Commanded us to stand down and surrender. And you know, I think we would have.
Probably.
What happened? I asked. His entourage stabbed him in the back. Almost literally. One of them put a hand on his back, blasted a hole in his chest. Didn't kill Tenjin, but it certainly startled him. I guess the traitor realized that a shroud doesn't protect someone from attacks that come from inside the shroud. Jin bristled. A visage could not be harmed so easily. Vera shrugged. Just telling you what I saw. Anyway, that traitor, woman in a dark mask, kept pummeling Tenjin. The other member of the entourage went for us. Tall bastard. Crazy good with a sword. Akion probably could have handled him, but our summoner hit Akion with some kind of binding spell. Pinned him to the ground. I sighed. This summoner. Was that Alorotheus by any chance? She tightened her jaw. Yeah, that's the bitch's name. You know her? I thought back to the fight between Karras and the Council of Lords. Alora had tried to chain Karras down, probably with the same spell she'd used on Tenjin. Karras had broken out almost instantly. I nodded. Yeah, or I know of her anyway. So she turned on your group and helped the people who were attacking? Yeah. It was obvious this was a planned ambush. Rochelle and Lawrence put up a good fight, but that swordsman was just too much. Must have been an emerald. Even three citrines couldn't stand up against him. Tenjin was starting to recover, but then Alora laid into him with her magic too. Managed to pin him down like she did with Akion. Then that masked woman knocked Tenjin out. That sounded insane. The idea of a group of humans managing to incapacitate a visage? Even if they accomplished it through the element of surprise, it was mind-boggling. Then again, I'd seen Karras manage to hold Katashi at bay in a straight fight. And Tenjin was the visage of inspiration. He wasn't known for his combat abilities. It was possible that he was considerably weaker in a direct confrontation than someone like Katashi would be. Something she said earlier scratched at the back of my mind, though. Why do you think Akion might have been able to handle the situation if he hadn't been incapacitated? Vera winced. You saw that mark on his forehead, yeah? I nodded, and another piece of the puzzle slid into place. You're experimenting with making artificial attunements, aren't you? Vera ran a hand through her hair. Been doing that for decades. This was a little more advanced than that. I won't bombard you with theory, but the point is that Tenjin was right. It's incredibly dangerous work. She paused, taking a breath, then continued. We were bringing Akion into the tower to test him against monsters. We tried smaller tests at home, of course, but we needed something closer to real combat. If the test had succeeded, we'd have had a weapon that might have been strong enough to prevent a war. I could understand the logic behind that. In fact, I was very interested in the subject of artificially creating attunements myself. If there was a way to give anyone power, and the power they wanted, not just what the goddess chose to give them, we could work toward a society with vastly better efficiency and quality of life for everyone. Elementalist farmers could make rain for their own crops. Shaper blacksmiths could create tools and weapons with less effort and better quality results. Summoner couriers could teleport from place to place, saving tremendous amounts of time and effort. There were already some people doing all these things, but most attuned were bound tightly to the military or similar pursuits. And, of course, only those people who were both wealthy enough to take the test and lucky enough to succeed managed to earn attunements. Most farmers never even stood a chance at getting one. Marissa's family probably had to save up for years just to get her a shot at taking the test. I could see problems with giving attunements to everyone, of course. The judgments might have served as some sort of vetting process to determine who would be safe enough to carry one without causing harm to others. And the school education afterwards served a second step in that process. Moreover, 2 years of proper training meant it was less likely that an elementalist would accidentally set a farm on fire or do something equally catastrophic. I was optimistic that a society equipped to create attunements could find a way to make it work. It was something I wanted to research on my own, and if people were already succeeding, I wanted to know more. The last part of what she said did bother me a little, though. Strong enough to prevent a war? Any individual attuned with that level of power was strong enough to start a war, too, or just cause tremendous damage. I'd need to find out more about that. What can you tell me about what you were doing with Akion? Why use a child? Vera shook her head. I'm not going to get into that.
It's a deep secret for a reason. And before you chastise me for it, keep in mind that Tengen wanted us to stop doing the experiments. I'm pretty confident Katashi wouldn't want me spreading knowledge about them further. I shook my head. Katashi seemed to want to kill Ekion outright. Do you know why? Vera shrugged. I can only speculate that Katashi was strongly opposed to what Ekion represented. I doubt the visages are happy with the idea of artificial attunements in general. I nodded at that. Can you tell me anything more about the tests you were planning to run? She winced. I'd really rather not discuss anything that might make Katashi even angrier with me. That was pretty disappointing. I wanted to know as much as possible about these tests so I could understand exactly how they worked. Maybe I could eventually devise safer alternatives. More importantly, I had some pretty serious moral issues with the idea of testing experimental magic on children, but I didn't have enough context to know what dangers, if any, the tests might have involved. I shook my head. Fine. We can talk about it more later if it becomes necessary. For the moment, though, tell me what happened next. Once Tengen was out, we tried to fall back, but that swordsman was brutal, and Alora knew all our tricks. She was one of the strongest members of our group in the first place. That masked woman teleported out with Tengen. That was the last thing I saw before the swordsman knocked me out. Then I woke up in a jail cell. I frowned. Describe the swordsman. Tall, olive skin, brown hair. He had a local accent. He talked with the other traitor and Alora a bit during the fight. Didn't say too much, but it sounded like he was the one giving orders. That brought a couple people to mind. Any chance it was Karis? She shook her head. Don't think so. Hair was shorter and lighter. Skin was darker. As it turned out, I knew an emerald-level swordsman who met that description pretty much perfectly. Derek Hardigan. And he was, of course, standing right outside. This was going to be awkward. I'd known from the moment that I'd seen Alora Theus on the list that there was a good chance Derek was involved too. This wasn't explicit confirmation, but it made the possibility much more likely. Karis was still a possibility. Someone as powerful as he was could have had another attunement we weren't aware of that enabled him to change his appearance. If he had a shadow attunement or something similar, he could have changed minor things once he ended up in that cell so that Vera wouldn't recognize him. I kept that possibility at the back of my mind, but Derek was clearly the more immediate concern. I put my thoughts together and replied. Okay, so Alora betrayed your group for reasons unknown. She probably summoned Tengen intentionally, but if the goal of her and her compatriots was to attack Tengen, why bother with all this? Vera twisted her lips as she considered that. Not sure. I assume those two people with her were connected with Tengen somehow and wanted his attention focused on something else, giving them a chance to attack while he was distracted. Or maybe it's a political thing. Presumably, they escaped with an unconscious Tengen, and then I ended up in that jail somehow, along with Ekion. Maybe they wanted to make Kaelford look responsible for Tengen's disappearance. I could follow that logic. To drive a rift between Kaelford and Velia. Yeah, that makes sense. Or just to get Katashi to focus his attention on Kaelford and Velia while Edria is at our borders. If Katashi sends monsters to attack us because his brother is missing, that gives Edria a window to strike while our forces are defending the university. That's what I think's probably happening. A couple Edrian agents trying to get Katashi to wreck this place while they invade. And by trying, I mean succeeding. Vera cracked her knuckles. Unfortunately, there isn't much we can do about it. I tilted my head to the side. Why not? We could go talk to Katashi. If you explain everything you just told me... She shook her head. Two main problems with that. One, your own government has me under surveillance here. If I go anywhere other than my house or this office, I'm going to get arrested. I considered that. Alora is probably the one keeping Vera under observation. I'm a little surprised she hasn't just had Vera arrested already, or just assassinated. Maybe Alora doesn't want to bring this issue out into the open. I don't know enough about the politics within the city's leadership to speculate deeply. I wish my mother was here. She might actually be on Alora's side in this, if that memory crystal was any indication, but at least I could probably get some answers out of her. Vera raised two fingers, continuing her explanation. Two, I'm not willing to let Ekion get dragged into this any further than he already has been. If I go to Katashi, he could use me to locate Ekion here. I'm not okay with that. If Ekion was already powerful enough that Vera believed he had a chance against an emerald, I could see why even a visage might be concerned about him, and I could see why Vera wouldn't want to give him up. Jin spoke up, surprising me. Vera seemed startled, too.
We can get you into the tower without the government knowing. Your best chance to save yourself is cooperation.
Vera absently scratched at the wall with her nails.
I'm still not willing to risk Ekion's suffering further.
I shook my head.
Ekion isn't Katashi's focus right now. Even if he was, I think we could convince him to make a deal. He wants his brother to be back safe. If we can convince him that this was probably an Edrian plot to conquer Velia, maybe that'll be sufficient to turn his attention elsewhere.
I don't like it.
Too many uncertainties.
Vera shook her head.
I'm not going in there without a clear plan.
I scratched my chin.
What if we offered to teleport Ekion to a safe place, where even Katashi might have a hard time finding him?
Can't trust that you aren't going to put him somewhere your own people are going to study him or hurt him.
I considered that. Katashi is going to come after you directly if you don't go right now, and he'll have an army of monsters with him.
If what you want is to keep Ekion safe, you want him as far from you as possible. What if we put him on a train back to Kaelford?
She rubbed her forehead.
I'd have headed back to Kaelford with him by now if I could, but your government has people checking up on us. Tell you what, if you can successfully get Ekion and my brother on a train to Kaelford, and I'm satisfied that they're not just going to be grabbed by your troops at the next city over, I'll go with you to the tower.
I vastly preferred this idea to trying to take Vera by force, even if we could accomplish it. If she cooperated, we had a better chance of taking Katashi down. Unfortunately, this meant trying to arrange for Ekion's escape while in the company of someone I suspected was involved in the whole conspiracy. I needed to arrange this in a way that Derek wouldn't find out where they were going. I took a breath.
Okay, I think I can make this work. I have someone outside that can teleport us. If your brother and Ekion are nearby, we can go where they're located and teleport a group of us straight to a train station. I don't know what her range limit is, but she probably has enough influence to get Ekion and your brother on a train without any questions being asked. Maybe even get you some fake passports if you need them. Give me a minute to make some arrangements.
I turned to Jin.
Can you keep her company for a minute?
Jin nodded in assent and I stepped back outside. I found the other three members of our group looking bored. I turned to Professor Orden.
I think I've made sufficient arrangements, but I need to talk to you in complete privacy.
Orden sighed dramatically.
Of course you do. Fine, fine, let's get this over with.
She went through her usual incantation, teleporting us into that strange void that she called a safe location.
Well?
I took a moment to gather my thoughts.
Okay, long story short, she'll go with us voluntarily if we put her brother and a child from Kaelford on a train back home in a way where they won't be discovered or stopped.
Complication is that people from our government are surveilling them, as you already mentioned. Professor Orden chuckled.
You want us to bypass border security? Is that all?
I didn't know if she was laughing because that was easy or hard.
She want to watch them leave, and any assurances that you could give that they'll make it back to Kaelford would be helpful.
Orden rolled her eyes.
Give me a few hours, and I can get them all the way out of Velia on my own. When we're in the unclaimed lands, I'll put them on a train. Do you want to come along?
My curiosity said yes, but my stomach was very at odds with that instinct. Ultimately, I decided on the responsible route, even though I knew I was going to regret it when my seasickness kicked in.
Yes. Anything else?
I nodded.
At this point, I could have told her everything that Vera had just told me, but I knew that Professor Orden was a member of some kind of secret organization with an agenda of their own. I didn't think she was involved, but I still didn't completely trust her either.
She gave me a considerable amount of information about what happened in there, and I have a strong reason to suspect that Derek might be involved in all this. I don't think we should bring him along.
Professor Orden's eyes narrowed. I'm going to need a little more than that, Corin. That's a fairly serious accusation.
I debated how much to say. She witnessed Tenjin being attacked, but she wasn't one of the people who attacked him. She described one of the attackers as a tall, emerald-level swordsman with short brown hair. Orden went still for a moment, and then shook her head.
That is worrisome, I agree. I believe it would be wise to bring him along and see how he behaves, but I will take significant precautions. An enchanter is always prepared for contingencies, but in this case, I will take extra care. I nodded. I'll be careful too. Orden grinned. I'm certain you will be.
2 hours later, I stood outside a train station in the unclaimed lands. It had taken 10 teleports to get us here. Professor Orden was waiting with Akion, Vera, and Aloris right near where the train was set to arrive. They were conversing about something, but I wasn't paying much attention. One reason was that I was feeling horribly motion sick. Teleporting with the concussion had been more painful, but 10 teleports managed to be way higher on the nausea. As I threw up into a nearby bush, though, I noticed something I'd never experienced. Tiny droplets of water falling freely from the sky. Rain. I knew what it was intellectually, of course, and I was no stranger to water itself, but natural rain? I'd never experienced it. I hadn't realized that it would make the air itself feel wet, that it would make things smell stronger. Everything in the rain felt a little bit more present, more real. It was glorious. Even with the world swimming around me from my motion sickness, I basked in the sensation of the droplets impacting against my clothes and hair. I barely noticed when Vera said tearful goodbyes to Aloris and Akion. I did notice something just before Akion stepped on the train, though. He gave me a shy smile, waved, and whispered, "Thank you." I waved in return. Maybe in all this mess, I'd done one small bit of good. After we watched the train depart, our group wandered a short distance away from the train station. It wasn't difficult to find a location to talk discreetly. We were miles from the nearest town, and only a few hundred yards in each direction around the train station had any signs of civilization. Beyond that, we hit the boundary of one of the deep forests that characterized much of the unclaimed lands. The Aspen Forest, maybe? I was terrible with geography. We didn't wander too far. It was well known that dangerous monsters prowled freely in these forests, and only the powerful wards around the train station and tracks kept them from being assaulted. Before the tracks had been built, there had been no easy path between Velia and Kaelford. The two countries were on opposite sides of the continent, with hundreds of miles of the unclaimed land and a few smaller kingdoms like Cytenia and Erwin in between. I was shocked at how thick the plant life was. Nearly every inch between the trees was covered in some sort of bushes or vines. We only walked in about a dozen meters before pausing in a small ring of grass. Professor Orden spoke first. "I trust you are all aware of how dangerous this particular excursion into the tower will be. If any of you want to bow out now, this would be the time." Vera smirked.
"I have a feeling that I don't get that option."
Orden shot her a dark look.
"No, Miss Corrington, you do not."
I glanced to Jin and Sarah, then back to the professor.
"I can't speak for the others, but I'm definitely going in."
"Clearly."
Professor Orden looked at my companions.
"Well?"
"Going,"
Sarah said.
"I am also going," Jin added.
"Yup, definitely going," Derek added, unprompted. "We should probably talk about what we're all capable of. At this point, I should let you all know that I'm an Emerald. I can handle most of the heavy combat for our group."
Vera's eyebrows rose at Derek's claim. I'd have been incredulous, too, if I hadn't physically seen his Emerald aura. Wisely, she remained silent. Arguing with him wasn't going to accomplish much. I scratched my chin.
"I've seen you fight, but I still don't know what your exact capabilities are. What attunement do you actually have?" "Oh, of course. I'm a soul blade. It's sort of like a combination between a summoner and an enchanter. I make contracts to bind monsters to items, giving the items magical properties. I can also bind monsters to myself, which gives me some of the monster's physical advantages. There are disadvantages, though." He took a breath. "Every monster I bind to an item takes up some of my mana while it's bound, much like it would for a summoner. That means I can't just manufacture tons of items like an enchanter. And unlike a summoner, I can't just spend mana to summon one or more copies of a monster as much as I want. I've only got the one monster in each item.
He tapped the swords at his side.
I can release the monsters temporarily to fight, but if they get hurt, they actually get hurt. They're not simulacra. The bond to the item affords them a degree of protection since they can retreat back inside, but they can die.
Sarah made a noise, stepping closer to Derek. Would it be possible for me to bind copies of the monsters you've imbued your items with?
Derek nodded. Technically possible, yeah, if I let them out for a bit, but I don't think it's a good idea. Delsus is a citrine-level monster, and Tavare is emerald-level. You could still make contracts, but your summoned versions would be much weaker, much like what happened when you summoned the Carvenzi. And moreover, I think you have too many bound monsters already.
What do you mean?
Sarah folded her arms. I saw you binding everything you could in that survival match. That was brilliant, by the way.
Sarah stood up a little straighter at that statement. Derek kept talking, though.
But you shouldn't hold on to that many bindings long term. You know how many creatures I've got bound? 4. And I'm an emerald. It's not worth taking up the mana to bind that many things to your attunement, especially when you're just getting started. It does make you more flexible, of course, but you won't have enough mana to actually deploy anything if all of it is being eaten up by contracts.
Sarah sighed. I'd love to get rid of some of my weaker contracts, but some of them are mandatory for my classes. And the ones that aren't mandatory, things like the ones I bound during that match, are ones I'd want to keep. I'm not exactly going to have a lot of opportunities to bind something as strong as a wyvern elsewhere.
Derek's eyes widened. You managed to bind the wyvern in there? I don't think I even noticed that. That's pretty impressive, kid. I agree that you should keep that one. But if you've got as many bindings as I think you do, I'll bet you could hit Carnelian right now if you just release some of the ones you're not using. And getting yourself a shroud would be far more useful than having a little more summoning variety.
Sarah blinked. Mana being used up by contracts doesn't count toward my attunement advancing? That makes a lot of sense, actually. She glanced from side to side. You know what? This is more important than classes. Slime, I release our contract. Goblin, I release our contract. Imp, I release our contract. I turned my attunement on, watching Sarah briefly shimmer as she spoke each line, and then a crimson aura burst around her as she spoke the final words.
Huh, I mumbled. Congratulations, Sarah.
She grinned brightly at me. Wish I'd known I could do that. I probably would have done it weeks ago. Think I should get rid of the ogre?
I shrugged.
Depends on if you think you'll need the muscle. I'll hold on to it for now.
Sarah turned to Derek.
Thanks for the advice. This feels amazing. I felt a brief pang of jealousy that Sarah's attunement level had exceeded my own, but it was mixed with relief. If Derek decided to betray us, I wanted Sarah to be as powerful as possible. A Carnelian wasn't going to be able to handle Derek on her own, but every bit of extra power helped our chances of surviving.
Just wait until you hit Sunstone. It gets better and better. Okay, enough from the two of us. Corn, what have you got?
I patted the sword at my side. I'm just a quartz-level enchanter. I have a basic magic sword with transference runes. Nothing to brag about. Aside from that, I have a demi-gauntlet that can fire bursts of gray and transference mana, and a stronger-than-average shield signet. I also have a device for measuring mana levels, but I don't think it'll be particularly useful in the tower. I didn't mention the return bell, the book, or the Jaden box deliberately. Derek was being friendly, but I still didn't trust him as far as I could throw him.
Oh, I added, I'm also borrowing Professor Orden's Ring of Regeneration.
I was a little worried that she'd want it back, but it was worth mentioning. I didn't think we had any other healing as far as I was aware. She nodded. You can hold on to that for now. You're more likely to need it than I am.
That's about it for me. Most of what I can contribute is normal supplies. Oh, I did bring a flask that generates water and a cloak designed to keep the wearer warm in case we end up camping. Both good ideas, Derek nodded. You should stay as far from combat as you can if you don't have a shroud yet. The improved shield sigil is a good idea, but it's far from perfect. Orden, you want to go next?
Sunstone level enchanter. I have a variety of useful devices, but I'm not going to list every one of them.
I frowned. Aren't you also a summoner?
Orden wrinkled her nose. Where'd you get that impression?
All the teleporting? She shook her head.
Ah, I can see why you might presume that, but summoning and teleportation are similar, but not identical. Extremely powerful summoners can teleport, but I can't claim to be one. I do have a second attunement for that purpose. I'm a wayfarer. It's a Dalish attunement focused exclusively on mobility and teleportation.
That answered a lot of questions, but it raised a few others. Nothing I needed to worry about immediately, though.
Orden folded her hands. I suppose it's safe to assume I will be able to teleport us short distances within the tower, but I require an anchor to teleport to. A person or object I'm familiar with is best. I may or may not be able to teleport us out of the tower if we are in a dangerous location. It depends on if the room we're inside is currently sealed. You should not expect me to be able to provide us with a reliable escape.
I nodded along with that answer. I had my return bell in case of emergencies, but it had similar restrictions.
Orden turned to Jin.
I believe you are next, Jin.
You may know that I carry two pistols, and I am capable of using them with a degree of skill. I have several other basic items of Korin's design, mostly focused on illusions and detection.
Derek nodded.
Sounds good. What's your attunement?
Jin clenched his jaw.
Apologies, but I would rather not say. Professor Orden is aware of my situation and my reasoning.
I frowned at that. I'd been assuming he was keeping his attunement concealed because he was in Spider Division, but this situation was potentially dangerous. That seemed far more important than a training exercise.
Orden nodded to Jin and turned to Derek.
I can confirm that Jin has a good reason for keeping his attunement private for the time being. Jin, if the situation is desperate enough, you may need to use your attunement regardless.
Jin dipped his head just slightly. I understand.
Still being painfully mysterious, but I shouldn't have been surprised. Given Jin's encounter with Katashi, I was beginning to wonder if Jin might work for Katashi directly. Katashi was the patron visage of Delanos, after all, and Jin had claimed to have the surname Dalen. Since he'd insisted he wasn't royalty, that left several other options, and being a government agent or a servant of Katashi were both options that made concealing his abilities logical.
Orden turned to Vera next.
Well, if Jin is going to be pointlessly evasive, I suppose Vera is next.
Vera shrugged.
Not much to say. Sunstone, for what little it's worth. I'm just an analyst. I can rapidly gather and process sensory information. Makes me good at reading through data and remembering it, but I'm not much of a fighter. Most practical skill in the tower is probably finding hidden passages, items, and that sort of thing.
That made some sense. It sounded similar to a diviner, but more focused.
We spent a moment in contemplation, each of us assessing the other members of the group, before Derek finally broke the silence.
We ready to do this?
Ready enough, I replied. I hope.
Another 2 hours later, six of us stood outside the tower. Sarah and Derek were bristling with energy, looking eager to get inside. We each signed a paper with the soaring wings at the gate. Under Professor Orden's instructions, Vera used a false name on the paperwork. If there really were government agents that didn't want her going into the tower, we couldn't afford to have them find out and send someone after us. After signing the paperwork, I excused myself briefly to find a public washroom before we entered the tower. While I was very close to losing my lunch over the teleporting, that wasn't why I needed a washroom. In truth, I just needed a private location. Closing the door, I found a utility closet large enough to stand inside and removed the rod that was connected to my return bell. It wasn't an ideal location, but I'd completely forgotten to ask Professor Orden where to put it. I didn't want Derek to know about the retreat method, so I couldn't ask while the whole group was together. At least I'd have a way out of the tower, even if appearing here would be a little bit awkward. Realizing that I wouldn't be alone again for a while, I checked my book. No reply yet. Unfortunate, since I was in dire need of any additional information I could get. With that, I made my way back to the group.
Everyone ready?
Professor Orden asked. We gave her a series of affirmative replies.
Good.
Professor Orden turned to Derek, handing him a jeweled ring. He accepted it with a frown.
What's this?
Just an emergency measure. Focus some gray mana into it if you need to get us out. If I'm incapacitated, we'll need another way to teleport out of here.
Guess I'm not the only one thinking about emergency escapes. I wondered if it worked exactly like a bell. The ring was too small for me to see the runes on it. I turned my head to Warden. She gave me a nod and a grin. I nodded in return. And with that, the six of us stepped into the tower. Chapter 20. Serpents. I found myself inside a circular white room, four tremendous support pillars forming a square within the circle. The pillars reminded me of where I'd first encountered Katashi. That was my destination now. He said he'd find me there, although I didn't know if he'd be waiting there, doubtful, or simply check in at some point to see if I'd arrived. It would have been nice to have a way to just contact Katashi and tell him to come pick Vera up at the entrance, but based on his prior behavior, I expected that any deviation from the plan was likely to antagonize him. I considered using the book to contact the voice of the tower again now that I was inside, but the voice had been clear that I wasn't supposed to let Professor Orden know that the book existed. This was a bad enough situation that I was tempted to do it anyway, but I decided against doing it immediately. I did have the Jaden box, but I didn't have anything strongly connected to him that I could use to try to summon him, and I already knew that summoning a visage was a terrible risk. Could I stick my branded hand in the box and use that as a summoning focus if I needed to? Maybe, but I didn't know if I had to close the box's lid, and I didn't feel like losing my hand unless I really needed to. That sounded rather uncomfortable. The others appeared around me. Fortunately, whoever designed the teleportation function for the tower entrance was apparently smart enough to have figured out a way to make sure we didn't appear right on top of each other. I glanced around the chamber as the others oriented themselves. The room was about 30 meters across. Next to us was a single large door that looked just like the one we'd entered through. An exit? Was walking back out of here really going to be that easy? There hadn't been an immediate exit during the judgment, but that was meant to be a single trip. If climbing the tower was more about learning how it worked and entering and exiting repeatedly over the course of years, it made sense for it to be somewhat easier to get back out. There were two doors on the opposite side of the room, near what I was picturing as the northeast and northwest pillars. The exit door was right between the southern pillars. I was already presuming too much. I turned toward Derek and jerked a thumb toward the door. "Is that an exit?" He nodded. "Yep. It's not like a judgment. We can walk out any time, as long as we can make it safely back here." Professor Orden snapped her fingers, drawing all of our attention. "Listen up, children. I know that for many of you this is your first experience climbing the tower. Now that we're here, we need to discuss our strategy." I nodded. "That makes sense, but is there a time limit in this room?" She shook her head. "This is what we generally call a landing room. There are several within the tower. Each tower entrance has one, and each time you reach a new level of the tower, you will often find one. It's a safe room. You can stay in landing rooms more or less indefinitely without consequences. If we were going up, we would most likely be using landing rooms to sleep every few levels." I breathed a sigh of relief at the revelation that there were safe rooms to stop and rest. Orden continued. "The first thing to discuss is our objective. Corin, what exactly did Katashi ask you to do? Be specific." "I need to bring Vera to the room where the two of us met him during my judgment. He insisted that she be alive, for what it's worth." Vera didn't seem to relax when she heard that. She just glanced at each of the members of our group looking nervous. I didn't blame her. I scratched an itch on my nose. "Beyond that, he said I had a 7-day time limit. I don't know how deep that room is into the tower, so I'm not sure how difficult that will be. I presume we're already on the 2nd day. Vera chimed in. "The room we found him in was the first floor below ground, or B1 as we'd usually call it." I blinked. "The tower goes down? I mean, I knew it felt like I was going down when I went through that grate, but I guess I assumed..." Derek chuckled. "It's a common misconception that the tower only goes up. Climbers are trying to get to the top of the tower, after all. But this place goes deep below the surface of the continent, too. The creatures that maintain the tower live down there. Workers and administrators and such. I'm a little surprised you managed to get down there during a judgment. That's unusual, but not unheard of.
I turned back to Vera. How'd you know what floor we were on? Is there an easy way to tell?
Vera pointed a finger at the side of her head.
Analyst attunement. Among other things, I can detect my current altitude. Not all floors are the same height, but we were just about 20 meters below the tower entrance when we were in that room, which was roughly the height of the staircase in the chamber. Thus, we were on B1.
I nodded.
Okay, how hard is it to get down there?
With me? Not bad.
Derek grinned.
Stairs down are harder to find. They're usually either concealed or protected somehow, but if we only need to go down one level, that should be very doable. 6 days is plenty of time. We'll probably be done in less than 6 hours.
Professor Orden shook her head. I appreciate your confidence, Derek, but we're not all a bunch of emeralds like yourself. We will need to proceed slowly and cautiously to ensure the children and our esteemed guest remain safe.
Derek nodded. Of course, we'll take it slow. I'm just saying that this doesn't sound particularly difficult. It's just important. If we prioritize monster rooms, I should be able to handle the danger by myself for the most part.
Sarah turned to Derek. Prioritize? Meaning that, much like with a judgment, we're going to have a choice of different rooms to proceed?
Yep. And one of the options is usually fighting. The tower gets more dangerous as you go further up, both in terms of traps and monsters. I could sleep through fighting most of the things on the first 10 levels or so, with the exception of Spire Guardians. I'll have to be awake for those, but I could be blindfolded and armless.
He winked at Sarah.
Not to brag or anything, of course.
Sarah rolled her eyes. Right. Just like you handled the survival match all by yourself.
Derek gave her a wounded look, putting his hand over his heart. That was a rare exception, Miss Cadence. I wasn't able to show my true strength in there. I was suppressing a considerable amount of my shroud to look like a citrine.
Why do that?
Sarah folded her arms.
Derek sighed.
We only have a few known emeralds in all of Velia. Emeralds are tactical assets in warfare, so we try to keep a relatively low profile. No laws about it, just common sense.
Orden nodded. Each attunement level is about 6 times more powerful than the last. Even an E-ranked emerald is 6 times more powerful than an E-ranked citrine, and so on.
Derek chuckled. And I'm hardly just E-ranked. Anyway, I'd normally never say this, but enough about me. We should focus on the task at hand.
Orden pointed at the northeast door. Shall we begin exploring, then? We can look at the 2 doors that are available and choose a path. I'll go check the walls for additional passages while you do that,
Vera offered.
And no, I'm not going to try to escape. I know you can teleport.
Professor Orden nodded.
I appreciate your cooperation.
Our group headed toward the northwest doorway. Unlike most of the doors in my judgment, this was a simple wooden door with no visible lock. Standard doorknob. It looked like the type of door you could find just about anywhere.
Derek waved for us to back off a bit, so we all stepped back while he approached the door.
Don't see a lot of traps on the first floor, but I should always be the one to open the doors just in case.
I liked the idea of having Derek up front. It made it much harder for him to stab us in the back. I watched carefully as Derek opened the door.
The next chamber looked pretty similar to the one we were standing in, with the exception of the fact that the floor was missing.
After a few seconds, a single floating tile appeared about a meter from the doorway. Another tile appeared a few seconds later, another meter or so out from the doorway. Then the first tile disappeared, and a third tile appeared, continuing the path. The appearing tiles were clearly making a path toward the solitary visible door on the other side of the room. A path that was, if I wasn't mistaken, meant for us to jump across one tile at a time. I didn't like this at all.
Derek reached into a pouch at his side and retrieved the most mundane of tools, a rock. He tossed the rock onto one of the visible tiles. It hit and bounced right into the darkness beyond. Looks like they're solid, at least.
He turned back to the group.
Orden, are the tiles actually discorporating or just turning invisible?
They're discorporating. You'd need to jump across with exactly the right timing, otherwise you'd fall into whatever that darkness is.
I thought I heard something from the pit, but it was barely audible.
Silly question. Sarah stepped closer to the doorway, looking down. Just seeing her that close made me uncomfortable. But if this goes down, would it be a possible shortcut to the floor we're looking for?
Not a bad thought, actually.
Derek peered down into the darkness.
Vera finished her circuit of the room and came to stand by the rest of us. I heard the rock hit the ground after about 5.5 seconds. That means the floor is about 148 meters down. Unlikely we'd survive that fall, and it's also 7 floors down.
Those were some pretty impressive senses.
Sarah set down her backpack. I've got rope. Could we lower someone down and break through a wall at the correct altitude?
Derek scratched his chin.
Maybe if there's a hollow wall that's designed for it, and there are a bunch of those in the tower. Have to be careful, though. If you try to break through one of the normal walls, the tower usually sends something to stop you. Even I wouldn't want to take the risk of fighting one of those guardians if I can avoid it.
Vera knelt down and pressed a hand against the stone just below the doorway. I don't detect any weaknesses in the wall right near us. There are 2 of them in the chamber we're currently standing in, though. They're located directly opposite the 2 visible doors. She gestured to the south side of the chamber. They're thinner than the standard wall segments, but I also detected mechanisms on the other sides, meaning I don't think they're meant to be smashed open. I think they're shortcuts back into this room from other parts of the tower.
Derek nodded.
It's pretty common. Lots of ways back to the entrance. We could try to bust through one to find a shortcut, but it's not worth the risk of antagonizing a spire guardian.
I gestured at the open door. Do we have any way of knowing if this even leads to a way down?
Vera stepped away from the doorway and turned to me.
Nope. But most tower paths tend to lead in a big circle, unless they end at a teleporter or a treasure room. If we keep exploring, we'll head a way down eventually.
Derek nodded in agreement and closed the door.
We could probably handle this pretty easily, but the first door usually gives you an idea of the character of a specific route. I'd rather avoid puzzles if we can.
If I was going it solo, I'd have probably disagreed, although timing-based puzzles weren't my greatest strength.
With this group, though, fighting our way through did seem a lot safer than counting on everyone properly timing their jumps. We headed over to the other door, and Derek opened it without incident. The next room was a long rectangular one with a single door directly opposite us. In between us and the door, however, were 3 titanic green slimes. Slimes were among the most basic monsters in any of the spires. They weren't smart or particularly dangerous. They were essentially gelatinous mana with a hint of animal cunning. The most common theory I'd heard was that they were essentially the byproducts of failed spells and magical experiments. The more solid ones could slam into you to break bones, but most of them just tried to envelop and suffocate people. This wasn't generally a big threat, since they weren't very fast or strong either. These slimes, though, they were a good 10 feet tall, and I was pretty sure the stone beneath them was sizzling. Acidic, then.
Derek turned towards Sarah.
You want to handle these?
Sarah blinked.
I mean, we could, but wouldn't it be easier for you to do it? And did we already decide on this room?
Derek waved a hand into the chamber.
Definitely. We're lucky to have found something this easy, trust me. I haven't had the luxury of fighting slimes in years. I've seen you fight once before, but I'd like to get a better idea of your whole group's fighting abilities. It will help give me a better idea of who I need to focus on protecting.
Orden leaned up against a wall near the door.
I agree with Derek's suggestion. While I'm confident that Derek could handle most of the monsters here without any difficulty, I'd like to see what the rest of you are capable of. And I'd rather that Derek save his strength in case Katashi isn't feeling diplomatic.
We had a moment of silence as everyone processed the gravity of that particular statement.
Orden and Derek shared a nod of acknowledgement.
They're planning for the possibility of fighting him, I realized.
I'd been so worried about Derek that I hadn't really considered what might happen if Katashi wasn't sufficiently satisfied when we delivered Vera to him. What if Vera told him something he didn't want to hear?
I didn't want to think about it.
I'd seen Karis fight Katashi for a few moments, so it was possible for a human to survive a conflict with a visage briefly. I still didn't know what that entailed, however. I'd heard that Karis had escaped, but that didn't mean he'd gotten out intact. I didn't know how Derek stacked up against Karis in combat ability, but I doubted he was much more powerful. I didn't know how powerful Orden was, either.
I hadn't missed the fact that she'd been deliberately evasive about how powerful she was with her Wayfarer attunement. But even if she was another Emerald, I didn't think they stood any significant chance in a direct confrontation. Maybe they could survive long enough to teleport us out, though? I dismissed the errant thoughts. I didn't have enough information to speculate with any level of accuracy. I had a few contingency plans of my own if I needed to use them. I turned to Derek. Can we just hit the slimes with attacks from out here? He shook his head.
Most spells won't pass through the doorway. That'd make it too easy, I suppose. Gotta get in there and put yourself at risk, otherwise there's no challenge. And Selyse loves challenges.
I groaned. What about if we blasted a small hole through a wall right next to the door? Would our attacks be able to pass through the gap we made?
Derek laughed, glancing toward Professor Orden.
Does he always try to solve problems by making bigger ones?
Orden nodded sagely. That would sum up Corrin's problem-solving methodology quite appropriately.
Sarah nudged me. Don't let them bother you. Come on, this'll be fun.
I sighed.
Fine. We'll go get to the fighting.
Derek stepped out of the doorway, bowed at the waist, and gestured toward the open door.
After you, then.
I grit my teeth. I didn't like letting Derek get physically behind me, but I was also letting him get under my skin, and in some ways that was worse. I needed to focus. I drew steel. Sarah, interestingly enough, did the same. I hadn't seen her wield a sword in years. We'd played with wooden blades as children, but we'd graduated to dueling canes as soon as we were old enough to use them. Well, younger than we should have, if the scarring developing inside my hand was any indication. Either way, the elegance of a full-sized sword was quickly overshadowed by the vastly superior fun of being able to blast each other with magic, at least for the two of us. Tristan had kept up standard sword training all the way up to going into the tower. He'd always had a stronger affinity for physical combat than I did. Apparently Sarah did, too. She settled into a fighting stance that I'd seen both my mother and Tristan demonstrate, but I'd never learned. It was a high stance, with the sword raised above the head and the blade pointed toward the enemy. It looked impractical. I was using a stance built for dueling canes, knees bent with the tip of the blade pointed directly toward the closest slime center of mass. This was, of course, even less practical. Unlike a dueling cane, this sword didn't have a rune to send a blast of energy out of the tip. In short, we probably shouldn't have been using weapons. Jin stepped up to my left side. He hadn't drawn any weapon at all. I turned and gave him an expectant glance as the slimes slowly lumbered toward us. He shrugged. Don't have a sword. Two pistols were clearly visible in his belt. I didn't bother to point that out. Okay, Jin. Have it your way. I wasn't going to wait until those things got close enough to swing at. Stepping forward, I brought my sword up and back down in a diagonal slash and pushed the blade's mana forward. The shockwave closed the distance in a second, cutting a deep gouge into the closest slime's gelatinous body. That didn't slow it down, though. Sarah hit it next, not with the sword, but with a rain of icy knives that manifested at her whispered word. That slime collapsed, falling still, but didn't vanish. The next closest slime crashed into it and stretched out over it. I blinked. Is it eating the other slime? I got my answer a moment later, when the top slime melted into the bottom one, causing it to swell in size. Then it started moving again, and considerably faster.
That's bad, Sarah mumbled. Okay, plan B. Hit it harder.
I nodded, pointing with my demigauntlet and rapidly sending several surges of mana into it. I blasted the slime with a half-dozen globes of energy, tearing off bits of goo with each burst. I damaged it, but nowhere near enough. Sword reach. I swung, but a pair of gelatinous spikes shot out of the creature's side and deflected my blade. I barely had time to widen my eyes and step aside as more spikes shot out, piercing the air where I'd been standing a moment before. Sarah jabbed Selyse Lian into the creature's side, leaving an icy wound. The slime shivered, tiny drops of slime raining everywhere before firing a sustained barrage of gelatinous spines in Sarah's direction. She didn't move. Instead, she said, "Wall!" and an icy barrier sprung up in front of her, blocking the spines. I took advantage of the distraction to run away. Or, more accurately, to run toward the single isolated slime that was still half a room away from us. The two merged slimes were clearly much stronger, and I didn't need this thing getting any more powerful from merging with a third slime. I assumed